The book of Luke, as we come to Luke chapter 23, is where we'll be. It's good to see you out this morning, and was really looking forward to seeing Pastor. And when the Lord moved him from eastern Tennessee all the way to here, it's a difference between 2 hours to about 6.5. And so I don't get to see him very often, and I was looking forward to it, and I called him on Friday. And we were going back and forth, maybe we were texting, and learned that he had been quarantined. I had that happen to me a couple of weeks ago. My wife had been exposed to someone, and so we had to quarantine for a little while, and I was glad that was over with when it was done. It's good to see you here this morning. I think it's wonderful to be back and be in places and seeing people coming to the house of the Lord. And worshiping together. One of the things that I learned over the last few months as a preacher is that I had taken being with God's people in church for granted. After about a month of that in North Carolina, I remember as an evangelist, people said, "What happened to your meetings?" Well, they all canceled. I stayed home in 2.5 months more than I had any other period of my life. But I remember when our church had its first outdoor service, I still remember going to that service, and I felt like a 5-year-old kid. I pulled my pickup truck in the parking lot and immediately just started looking around at people going like this. And it really did. It showed me just how much I'd taken for granted God's people. I think there is something to the fellowship of God's people that in this day and time that we desperately need. And your being here this morning, I think, is a testimony to that. And there's a need for God's people to talk to one another, to fellowship, to encourage, to sharpen one another. And that's just one of many great things about being in God's house. I hope that you'll pray for the ministry at Ambassador. There's a table that's set up as you walk out. It'll be on your left-hand side. I have a few materials about the school. We have some pamphlets that tell you a little bit about the things that we offer. We also, Dr. Ron Comfort, our founder and chancellor, his autobiography, I have a few copies of that, A Fire in My Bones, which is a wonderful testimony of God's grace, how that God reached down in a horrible situation in Brooklyn, New York, and would eventually save a young man, call him to preach the gospel, and use him for many years across the country and even around the world in proclaiming the gospel. It's a great story. For those of you that have heard Brother Comfort's preaching and through the years, you've heard snippets of his testimony. This sort of puts it all together. And as a matter of fact, after I read it, I came to him. I said, "I didn't know this about you." And he was like, "Well, that's true. I just decided to put it in there." So a lot of good things there. And so there's also a card that you'll find on the table. There's one word on it that you'll see that is very big. It's the word preacher. And it's just a little prayer card to challenge people to pray that the Lord would raise up more laborers for the harvest. It's taken from "How Shall They Hear Without a Preacher," that verse in Romans. And I would encourage you, pick that up and pray, as I said in the Sunday school hour, that God would raise up more men to faithfully preach the Word of God. It's a desire of my heart at Ambassador. We train both men and women for the men, pastoral studies, evangelism, missions, music, youth ministries. For the ladies, church ministries, missions, music, and church secretarial. So we do train both the men and the women, but I'm really burdened that God would raise up a generation of young men who without fear would be faithful in preaching the Word of God. And so stop by the table. I'd love to talk with you after the service if you have any questions. And you can visit our website at ambassadors.edu, ambassadors.edu. Be sure to put the S on it, all right? If you don't, that gives you the Worldwide Church of God with Herbert W. Armstrong, and that's the last person you need to be listening to, all right? So be sure to add the S to it. I appreciate your pastor. I appreciate his friendship, and every time I'm with him, I'm always encouraged. We had him down at Ambassador a while back, and the Lord blessed our fellowship, and so it looks like you're taking good care of him, and that he delights in what he's doing here and the work that God's called him to do, and I'm glad that he's here. Luke chapter 23, I'd like to read one verse for our text, and that's verse number 34. Luke chapter 23 and verse number 34. In this excerpt of the crucifixion account, it says, "Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted His raiment and cast lots." You know, I think that we as Christians are guilty of not looking at the cross nearly as much as we should. We sing in our congregations, "Jesus, keep me near the cross," and yet we don't take the time to slow down and look at it. If we're not careful, mature believers, and I put that in quotes, sometimes come to the conclusion that they need to search out the quote-unquote deeper things of God, and they cease to look at the cross. But I want to remind you today, I don't think there's anything deeper than the cross. The depth of love, the depth of mercy, the depth of forgiveness. I propose to you, if you want to see something deep and profound, look at the cross. And so this morning, I want to invite you to see in these words of Jesus the forgiveness of the cross. When He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Last words often carry great weight, do they not? Have you ever talked with a loved one in maybe dying moments, and you heard them say things that were very sentimental, or they said things that were very important as they knew that they were parting the river, that they were parting to go onto the other side? I remember years ago I got a call from my aunt, and she had informed me that her husband, my Uncle Pee-wee was his name, he was a junior, so they called him Pee-wee, that he'd been diagnosed with liver cancer. And she said, "Alton, you need to get here. We don't know how long he's going to last." I happened to have a Sunday off, and I told my aunt that I would take the trip, and I did. I made the trip to my uncle's house. I remember greeting her at the door, and I walked into the living room, and I was not prepared for what I was about to see. I watched and I saw a man sitting there. His skin was jaundiced, and he was a shell of the man that I knew him to be. And he was just staring straight ahead. And so I tried to make conversation with my uncle. And he was not very talkative at the time. And it was a few minutes later, he looked at me as if he'd broken out of a trance. And he looked at me and he said, "Alton, I want you to preach my funeral." Now, you have to understand that we as preachers, when we're told things like that, it's sort of awkward. How do you react? "Well, good. I want to do that." "No." And I remember looking at my uncle and I said, "Well, Uncle Pee-wee, listen, you can live 100 more years, and then if that comes and it comes time to preach it," I said, "I'd be glad to do it." That was some of the last words that I spent with my uncle. And I remember it was just a couple of weeks later or so that I got a call from my cousin. This was a cousin who was a good, strapping man. I'm telling you, he's a man's man. And my cousin called me up on the phone, I think it was a Monday morning, and he was weeping, and through his tears, all he could say was two words, "He's gone." So I told my cousin, I said, "I'll make the trip back up and see you folks." So they were going to visit with the funeral home and other things. And so I got up there and I talked to my cousin and I said, "Hey, tell me what happened." And he said, "Alton, you would not believe this." He said, "The day that my dad passed, that morning, he had been non-communicative. He just not really had talked very much in the previous days. And he said the morning of his passing, he came all of a sudden and he was very vivid and alert. And he called for all of us to come into the bedroom. And he said, so it was me and my sister and my mom and my fiance, and we're gathered in the bedroom. And my dad just proceeded to make his rounds. He looked at my mom and told her how much he loved her and how that he was glad they'd been married all these years. He said, then he looked at my sister and he spoke to her and he spoke to me. And he said, he even spoke to my fiance. They were getting married just a few weeks. And he looked at her and he said, "Listen, I'm so sorry that I'm not going to be around at the wedding, but," he said, "I want you to know I'm so glad that you're getting married." And he said, Alton, after he spoke his piece, it's like he just went off into just a trance. And then after that, just probably 30 minutes later, he had passed away. You know what? There's a family in the central part of North Carolina. They'll never forget those last words as long as they live. And whether you realize it or not, do you know that just a few minutes ago, we read the last words of a dying man? As Jesus Christ is hanging on the cross and He says these very important words, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And while there are many things that I could speak of about the cross this morning, I want to speak to you about the forgiveness of the cross. My friend, if you're here today and you've never experienced God's forgiveness, God offers it to you. There are a lot of people in the world today, they know nothing of God's forgiveness. There are a lot of people today that are carrying guilt and doubt in their hearts every day when eternity is a prospect before them. Fear grips their hearts. Why? Because they are in need of God's forgiveness. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, the cross not only gives hope to every person without Jesus Christ, but the cross gives instruction to every believer. You can't help but look at the cross and understand this, that forgiveness is not just a wonderful thing to receive, it's a wonderful thing to give. And I'll tell you, there'll be no healing in our families, our churches, or our country without forgiveness. And so for the next few moments, I want you to look hard at the cross, and I want you to ask yourself the question, have you personally received God's forgiveness? And not only that, listen, Christian, I want to encourage you to look in your heart and see if you're unwilling to offer God's forgiveness. Jesus Christ forgave us, and we must forgive others. And so as we consider this scene on Calvary today, the first thing that I invite you to see with me is the background of this cry. When you come to verse 34, it tells us that Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. But those words are made even more powerful when you consider what all Jesus experienced before He uttered them. And while that is a gripping phrase, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, listen, a casual survey of the crowd that day will show us that Jesus was tortured in a very malicious and purposeful way. Looking across the crowd, you would see a religious crowd that had been known to scream, we have no king but Caesar. And thus fulfilling the prophecy, he came into his own, but his own received him not. I want you to see what happened to Jesus before he uttered those words. One of the things that he experienced was the disloyalty of the disciples. Jesus called out 12 to come by his side and invested approximately 3 years into their lives of close, intimate fellowship and mentorship. And yet, after 3 years of that type of relationship, listen to me, all of them forsook him. Luke 22:47, and while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he that was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. We see out of those 12, there was one that betrayed him in such a way that would deliver him to the cross. And the betrayal that Jesus experienced, listen to me, it was very cruel. You say, well, he was kissed. That made it all the more cruel because here Jesus is betrayed by one that he loved with a token of affection that was insincere and pointing the crowd to this is the one you need to take. It's bad enough to be betrayed, but to be betrayed by an insincere kiss. Jesus experienced the betrayal of Judas. Jesus experienced the betrayal of all of His disciples when they all forsook Him and fled. And Jesus would experience the betrayal of perhaps the most vocal disciple of them all. Peter. Peter who declared, "I'll not leave, I'll not forsake you." And yet in Mark 14, verses 69 and following. "And a maid saw him again and began to say to them that stood by, 'This is one of them.' And he denied it. And a little after, they that stood by said again to Peter, 'Surely thou art one of them, for thou art a Galilean, and thy speech agreeth thereto.' But he began to curse and to swear, saying, 'I know not this man of whom ye speak.'" When we think of the cross, we think about the physical pain that was inflicted upon Jesus. But I want to remind you that Jesus experienced an emotional pain that unlike anything that any of us have ever experienced. Now, sometimes we preachers are known to say things off the cuff that are sometimes superlatives, and we go back later on and we say, "Well, okay, maybe I should have coined it better." But I want you to know, when I say that Jesus experienced an emotional pain greater than any person in this room, I mean that. And the reason I want to emphasize that is, even in a congregation like this, there are sometimes Christians who have experienced great emotional pain and turmoil. There are some of you in this room, you've experienced a disloyalty and you've had your heart broken in a way that I've never had mine broken. And what do I say to you this morning? I say, look to the cross. Because after experiencing the disloyalty of His disciples, Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." But not only did He experience the disloyalty of the disciples, He experienced the hatred of the religious leaders of His day. He came into His own, and His own received Him not. So much so, in Matthew 26, the religious crowd has to hire false witnesses to accuse Jesus. How much did the religious crowd hate this man? The religious crowd hated this man so much that they enlisted people to lie so that he could go and be nailed to an old rugged cross. And you know what? There's a lot of people today that have been wounded by religion. There's a lot of things that are done in the name of religion. There's a lot of things that are said in the name of religion. And you know what? There are people that sit in the pews and people that are outside the pews. They've been wounded by religion. And my friend, if that's you, can I tell you, Jesus knows how you feel. Because He was wounded by the religious crowd. You see, a man has a choice when he's been wounded by the religious crowd. He can either live all of his life bitter and upset and despise the entire world, as I have seen some do. Or he can say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Jesus experienced the disloyalty of His disciples. He experienced the hatred of the religious leaders, and He experienced the cowardice and the brutality of the Romans. Here's one crowd that said, "We'll follow you." They've forsaken Him. Here's another crowd that says, "We never wanted you to start with." And here's another crowd, they're like, "We don't care who you are, we just kill people." And those Romans subjected Jesus to the most brutal death you could imagine in that day. One that was designed to be slow and painful and embarrassing. Not only would Jesus experience the great pain of the crucifixion, but the humiliation of it as He hung naked before His audience. You know, the artwork that you see about the cross today, I'll tell you what, it doesn't hold a candle to what it actually looked like. First, Jesus was beaten beyond recognition even as being a human being because He had experienced such torment according to Isaiah chapter 52. But on top of that, listen, there was no shame. They hung Him naked and emaciated before that crowd. Now the reason I describe that all to you this morning is because of this. Jesus was betrayed by those He loved. Jesus was shunned by those that He wanted to save. And Jesus was treated with the greatest malice. And yet He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Have you experienced disloyalty? Have you experienced unfaithfulness? People talking behind your back, unkind words, assumptions of your motives, the spreading of rumors. And you find your heart bound, you find your life in turmoil. Listen to me, look to the cross and say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And leave here a free man. But not only do I want you to see the background of the cry of forgiveness, but I want you to see the timing of this forgiveness. The timing of this forgiveness, the story is told in the very first word of verse 34. "Then said Jesus." Timing's very important, is it not? Every year at Ambassador, we have couples that get engaged. And sometimes I'll ask the fella to tell me about the evening that he had planned and how the engagement happened. Timing's very important. You want to make sure you do things at the right time. You know, the time to ask the girl to marry you is not on the first date. I guess you can do it, but it won't go over well. Well, here's my question. When is the time to forgive? I have a calendar. I keep dates on my calendar. I keep times on my calendar. Hey, what is the time to forgive? Well, I believe by looking at the cross, Jesus teaches us that the time to forgive is now. That timing factor doesn't set well with us because sometimes we like to stew. We love to vindicate ourselves. We love to self-justify how we feel. And the longer we let that go, the more we feel good about it, at least for a while. Listen, Jesus teaches us this, that the time to offer forgiveness, the time to have a heart of forgiveness, is not 20 years down the road, 10 years down the road, even 5 months down the road. Jesus speaks this before His death, right after all these things have happened. Now, I'm not here to promote insincerity. If you're here and you've been hurt, you've been wounded, I'm not saying just as soon as it's over with, you say, "Well, okay, I forgive. Okay, that's the magic words." It's a little harder than that. But I will tell you this, the sooner you get your heart to where it needs to be and you say those words with sincerity, the better off you'll be. Listen, I know in churches of people who've waited many years to offer that cry of forgiveness. I've known of some people who lived under the guise of a misunderstanding for years and had no idea about it. And it wasn't until 5-10 years later that they realized that they let this linger all this time. Can I tell you, don't wait. Then said Jesus, when the disloyalty came, when the religious leaders rejected Him, and when the Romans crucified Him, when all of that was culminated, then said Jesus, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." You know the word forgive, that's a tender, great word. I love it. Ephesians 4 and verse 32, "And be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." You know, before we even talk about the forgiving one another, I want to invite you to do something this morning. And here it is. Can you remember when God forgave you? You say, what do you mean? Do you remember the day that you realized that your guilt of sin was greater than you could bear and that Jesus Christ died on the cross to pay for your sin, and that day you bowed your head or whatever and you trusted Jesus Christ as your personal Savior? Do you remember the day that you received God's forgiveness? You know, sometimes people are bothered by that question. I've talked to people and I'd say, listen, tell me when you got saved. And they would look at me and say, well, that's a personal matter. Or they might say, well, you know, I just don't want to talk about that. I've always been perplexed by that. And I'll tell you why. If after the service, my wife Michelle and I were out there, we've been married 25 years, we'll be 26 in August. And you came to me after the service and you said, hey, Brother Bill, it's nice to meet you and your wife. When did you get married? And I looked at you and said, I don't want to talk about it. Or I wanted to sound a little more dignified and I said, well, to be honest, it's a personal thing. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I bet you people in Fairfax are just like people in North Carolina. You'd go out to the parking lot, and when you shut the doors, you'd look at your husband and say, boy, he's in for it. I think every person in this room would say, there is something wrong with that marriage, or at least that man. And you know what? You'd be right. Can I tell you, can I make an honest application this morning? If you're here today and you were asked the question, tell me when you got saved or tell me when your sins were forgiven, and it's something that you don't want to talk about or it's a subject that you want to avoid, can I tell you respectfully, listen to me, there's something wrong. And I find that there are some people, they deal with a lack of forgiveness all of their lives. One of the reasons why is because they've never tasted of God's forgiveness themselves. While this message is in large part about God's people being forgiven, listen to me, don't miss the most important thing. You need to personally taste of God's forgiveness. You need it more than the air you breathe. For me, it happened when I was about 12 years old. I rode a church van to the Turners Creek Baptist Church, heard the gospel preached for 2 years, and on a Sunday afternoon in my bedroom, I took out a gospel track, and there I took God at His word, for whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And it was on that Sunday afternoon that I received God's forgiveness. I'll never forget it. My friend, if you're here this morning and you've never tasted of God's forgiveness, can I tell you, you don't have to leave the same way you came in. You say, well, we're in a socially distanced service, or, you know, it's just a huge auditorium. Listen to me, that doesn't matter. But now let's back up when the Bible says that we should forgive, forgiving one another even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. You know, when He's talking about forgiving one another in this direct context, He's talking about believers. You know, sometimes believers do stupid things. Do you know that? This isn't a room full of perfect people. If for no other reason, because I'm standing on this platform. But I'm telling you, if we would all be honest, we would know we've all done stupid things that have hurt other people. And can I tell you what the solution is? God said, forgiving one another. Just like God forgave you, God wants you to forgive others. You know, some people aren't willing to offer that cry of forgiveness. They say, well, I know that I ought to forgive, but I'm not going to do it. Now, while I appreciate that person's honesty, I also lay in fear for them because they're withholding the very thing that God gave them. God gave them forgiveness, but they say, I'm not going to forgive. And sometimes people will say this. They say, I'm not going to forgive, and I'll tell you why I'm not going to forgive. Because you don't understand what happened to me. Hey, can I let you guys in on a secret? Sometimes people get testy with preachers. But that's okay, because you know what? I would rather be transparent. And there have been times I've talked to people, and they might say, you never had happen to you what happened to me. How dare you tell me to forgive? You know what I say when somebody tells me that? I don't make something up and say, well, I just want you to know, I probably had something. I have no clue. And you know what? There have been people that have had worse things have happened to them than me. I'm not going to sit here and try to one-up everybody. And my friend, you may be here today and you'd say, preacher, I'm going to tell you, I just really wrestle with it. I get tired of you guys saying you ought to forgive. You've never had, and you know what? You're right. I have never had anything happen to me maybe worse than what's happened to you. But with all due respect, can I just ask you about 3 or 4 questions before I end this message like this? When's the last time you were nailed to a cross? When's the last time all of your best friends in this world forsook you? When's the last time you hung on a cross naked in front of your own mother in embarrassment and shame and humiliation when she cried till there were no more tears? When was the last time you had that happen to you? And the truth is, every last one of us would have to hang our heads and come to this conclusion. Anything that's happened to me was not worse than what happened to him. And remember what Jesus said? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It's time to drop that excuse this morning. Other people say, well, if I forgive, I'll just tell you, they're just going to do it again. We've played this game. I say, I forgive, and then they just turn around and they hurt me again. I'm not playing that game. Now, on the surface, that sort of sounds reasonable. It's sort of like digging a hole when you know somebody's just going to fill it in. You're like, well, I'm not going to forgive. I mean, they're just going to do it again. And we let that justify our unforgiveness. But did you know that Jesus spoke directly to that? Let me tell you, Jesus said a lot of things that people, they sort of miss. Peter comes to Jesus in Matthew chapter 18. Peter said, Lord, how oft shall I forgive my brother sin against me? How oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till 7 times? Had I been Peter, I thought, boy, I'm doing good. Lord, how many times when brother comes and sins against me, should I forgive him? I mean, 7 times? That's a lot. Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until 7 times, but until 70 times 7. We got a math team in here this morning. I bet you without a calculator they could figure that one out. Some of you are like 490 times. Listen, if you're keeping tabs in your little black book, throw your black book away. Jesus wasn't teaching you 490 times. Jesus was saying repeated forgiveness is what we need. You know how homes get in trouble? Because a husband or a wife loses sight of repeated forgiveness. Now, somebody might say, well, you just forgive and you enable the other person. You know, instead of looking at it that way, I'll tell you this. You know what? When you don't forgive, you enslave yourself. Can I encourage you to do something? You be sure that this book supersedes man's philosophy when it comes to dealing with things in your life. Because I'm telling you, this book will help you. It is eternal. It is true. But man is fallible and flawed. But I wonder if there's somebody here today, you are withholding that forgiveness. Because you think what's happened to you is worse than anybody else, or it's repeatedly happened to you. Listen to me. I want you to do one thing before you leave this. If you hold that in your heart, listen to me. Look at the cross and hear Jesus say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." But the last thing that I want to show you this morning is the blessing of forgiveness. After Jesus says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," notice the last part of the verse, "And they parted his raiment and cast lots." Did everybody change their minds? Did everybody say, "Oh, what have we done?" and take him off the cross? No, as a matter of fact, they just did. They continued doing what they were doing. Can I tell you, forgiveness does not just cause people to stop in their tracks and immediately say, "You know what, I did you wrong." Very often, that's not what happens in forgiveness. Now, I know there are moments where we forgive one another, and that's a beautiful thing when it happens back and forth. But there's a lot of times that a person makes a choice to forgive, and the offending party just continues to do what they're doing. You know what? Forgiveness is not so much about stopping the other party from what they're doing as much as setting your own spirit free. You know what the blessing of forgiveness? Regardless of what the offending party chooses to do, you can continue on and you can live with a freedom in your heart. What am I saying? I'm saying when Jesus bowed His head on that cross and He gave up the ghost, there was not one ounce of bitterness towards those who had done maliciously towards Him. He didn't die in turmoil emotionally in this sense of, "Oh, I can't stand these people." No, I'll tell you what, when He bowed His head and died, He was at peace. You know, I think one of the most amazing illustrations to me in the Old Testament of forgiveness is between David and Saul. Do you remember what all Saul did to David before Saul died? You remember David and Jonathan were best friends. Jonathan was Saul's son. David had some inside access to the royal household. And before it's over with, David is the object of Saul's javelin practice. Saul tries to kill David repeatedly. Hated him so much that he chases him into the wilderness with his band of men, and he is actively seeking, trying to kill David over a long period of time. Finally, the day comes that Saul is killed in battle. And of all the people to speak at Saul's funeral, David did. Had you been David, what would you have said at the funeral? You'd have stood up there and said, "I'll tell you one thing. That guy who was the king, he tried to kill me. But let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, he got what he deserved. As a matter of fact, I'm going to publish it for the whole world to see. I'm going to call CBS, NBC, and everybody else. And I'm going to tell the world that this dirty rat died after doing me wrong. And I have been vindicated. I am the king." That's what we'd have done. You know what Saul, or you know what David did? 2 Samuel 1, verse 20, it says, David said, "Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ascalon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph." Do you know what David said? David said, "Listen, don't tell the enemies of God. They're going to blaspheme God." Because David realized it wasn't about him. It was about God. Instead of wanting vengeance, he let brokenness replace that vengeance. And then in verse 23 of that chapter, it says, "And the sword of Saul returned not empty." Listen to what David said. "Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives." Stop. David, you're a liar. Lovely and pleasant. The man tried to kill you. No, you know what I believe happened? I believe in those days, the only reason David could say those things is because he'd made a choice in his heart to not be bound and enslaved by that. And at that time of his life, he could just remember the good and just walk away. Can I tell you, if David could do that with Saul, you know what? There's not a single reason why you can't do that today. Instead of letting your heart be all pent up with the bad, listen to me, it's possible to forgive and walk away remembering the good and not being enslaved. David made that choice and you can too. You know, before the day's out, there's a lot of things you'll probably see. You'll probably see a lunch menu today. You'll probably see maybe a sporting event. Maybe you'll just sit by your favorite window in the house and just watch the wind blow the trees. But I want to beg you this morning, when you leave this place, there's one thing that you desperately need to see, and that's the cross.